Poetry is a strange angel.
This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the achievement of Jeffrey Hill. Jeffrey Hill died on June 30th, 2016, at the age of 84. He was one of the best known, but maybe for someone of his stature, one of the least read poets of his generation. He wrote in what is called the high style, dense, elusive, and intellectually challenging poems that sometimes reminded people of T.S. Eliot. What he lacked in popularity, he made up for in critical regard. In the 1990s, Donald Hall, for instance, called him the best English poet of the 20th century. Whatever you might think of that, you can't deny that Hill was a very serious poet. At a reading in London in 2009, he told his audience that poetry is a strange angel.
And has very little to do with enjoyment, actually. Great deal to do with joy, not with enjoyment. Enjoyment is patronizing and possessive, like the old archaic euphemism of a man in sexually enjoying a woman's body. So when you enjoy a poem, you say, you are mine, and you please me in my current mood. And the angel of poetry says, sod off. Sod off!
And that was the patter between poems. I'm joined now by David Yezzie to talk about Jeffrey Hill and to listen to a few of his poems. David's a poet and a professor at Johns Hopkins, the editor of the Hopkins Review, and a fairly frequent guest on this podcast. So, David, when Hill died last month, you wrote on Facebook that Hill has moved you more than any poet in your lifetime. Tell us a bit about him and why he moved you so much.
Yeah, I think that's really true. I hesitated to write that because it's such a broad statement, but there's something about his language that almost reveals English to me as if for the first time. It's sort of the feel I get from reading passages of Shakespeare. There's so much pressure and attention to the subtle charges of language and its sound play and ambiguities that I find it deeply moving. Yeah.
I was interested you said that because Hill has this reputation, probably unfairly earned, as being a difficult poet, and you don't often associate emotion with difficult poets. But he is an extremely emotional poet.
And he writes about subjects of real violence and complexity and darkness. I mean, he will find words. Imagine that. He will find words to talk about the Holocaust. He will find words to talk about the bloodshed on which England was founded and perpetuated. You know, so he's able to look into the real dark recesses of history.
You met him, I believe, once or twice. How did he see himself as a poet? He's been praised as one of the great poets in English writing in the last, 100 years. Did he see himself that way?
I don't know. Certainly he didn't exude an air of self-importance.
Yeah, I was watching videos of him, and he's very self-mocking and has a good...
That's right.
Yeah.
He had a terrific sense of humor. And so he can, sometimes he, in his lectures and interviews, can sound very severe. Mm. He certainly had very deeply held convictions. But he often, as you say, was not only self-mocking, but even self-lacerating sometimes. Mm-hmm. And very forthright about his real difficulties with depression. And it was in coming to America, when he finally received treatment for depression, that he began to write at a much faster rate. There may have been some connection there. And also, he said to me, we were having dinner one night, he had received an award, and I happened to be in attendance, and he said, my only regret was that I didn't get it sooner. In other words, the help for his depression and the medication for that.
Hmm. Now, he wrote quite a bit, especially in the last few decades of his life, perhaps after coming to America and receiving treatment for depression. And I checked out his collected poems in the library, and it's close to 1,000 pages long.
It's huge. Yeah.
So
yeah.
In this podcast, we're going to be able to give listeners only a brief glimpse into his, the briefest sliver of something. But let's start with the first poem in the first book he published in 1959. The book is called For the Unfallen, and the poem is called Genesis. So the poem is in five sections. Let's listen to the first two sections from a CD called The Poetry and Voice of Geoffrey Hill, made by Cadman in 1979.
Genesis. Against the burly air I strode, crying the miracles of God. And first I brought the sea to bear upon the dead weight of the land, and the waves flourished at my prayer, the rivers spawned their sand. And where the streams were salt and full, the tough pig-headed salmon strove, curbing the ebb and the tide's pull to reach the steady hills above. The second day I stood and saw the osprey plunge with triggered claw, feathering blood along the shore to lay the living sinew bare. And the third day I cried, "Beware the soft-voiced owl, the ferret's smile, the hawk's deliberate stoop in air, cold eyes and bodies hooped in steel, forever bent upon the kill."
David, so the poet is obviously echoing the creation of the world in Genesis, day one, day two, and so on. In the first day, he's almost participating in the creation of the world. In the second part, he's horrified by the violence of nature.
Yeah, it happens pretty quickly, right?
But who is this I? That it's not God, it's I, the poet, I guess, witnessing the creation of the world?
Well, it's unclear, but that's certainly part of it, right? And it is a bit about poetry and about creation, artistic creation, as well, I think, as these larger concerns of the innate goodness or power to redeem in nature, which I think Hill questions, is skeptical about.
Now, it's interesting when he describes the violence of nature, he says, mentions the osprey and the triggered claw, which are wonderful images.
Oh, beautiful, yeah.
And the third day I cried, "Beware the soft-voiced owl, the ferret's smile, the hawk's deliberate stoop in air, cold eyes and bodies hooped in steel, forever bent upon the kill."
Those bodies hooped in steel, the only thing that could mean are soldiers. He's incorporating people into the violence of nature.
Yeah, and it's a theme that he kind of just keeps coming back to and back to. He seems to really announce what he is doing and what he's going to continue to do.
Yeah, his poetic project. Let's skip now to the fifth and final stanza, which is about the sixth day of creation before the day of rest on the seventh.
Yeah, this is an incredible section.
"On the sixth day, as I rode in haste about the works of God, with spurs I plucked the horse's blood. By blood we live, the hot, the cold, to ravage and redeem the world. There is no bloodless myth will hold. And by Christ's blood are men made free, though in close shrouds their bodies lie under the rough pelt of the sea. Though earth has rolled beneath her weight the bones that cannot bear the light."
So, David, is there a spiritual accommodation of violence that's happening here? He says, "By the blood we live, the hot, the cold, to ravage and redeem the world, there is no bloodless myth will hold."
It was interesting. I just finished reading Virgil's Aeneid, right? And the founding of Rome necessitates a lot of bloodshed. In fact, the poem ends just as Aeneas plunges in his sword in victory. So I think what Hill is saying is that in terms of our history, certainly in terms of the Bible, because now next he turns to Christ, right? There is no literature, there is no myth, there is no understanding of who we are as people, I think Hill is saying, that is convincing without the admission that, you know, the ultimate price in blood is always going to be a part of the equation.
Let's hear another poem. This one's from his second book, King Log, and it's called September Song. It's about a 10-year-old child who is sent to the camps and dies in the camps during the Holocaust. This was recorded in Oxford in 2006.
And another poem called September Song, which has the subtitle or epigraph, born 1906-32, deported 24-9-42. Undesirable you may have been, untouchable you were not, not forgotten or passed over at the proper time. As estimated, you died. Things marched sufficient to that end. Just so much Zyklon and leather, patented terror, so many routine cries. I have made an elegy for myself, it is true. September fattens on vines, roses flake from the wall, the smoke of harmless fires drifts to my eyes. This is plenty. This is more than enough.
So that was Geoffrey Hill reading September's Song, a poem he wrote in the 1960s, but he was reading here in 2006. Now, David, this is a very moving poem to me, though I'm not even clear why. The language is so dry all the way through. It's so laconic, but it's very moving.
Well, the tone is really kind of devastating, right?
As estimated, you died. Things marched sufficient to that end. Just so much Zyklon and leather, patented terror, so many routine cries.
The thing that stands out for me, and I just think every part of it is incredible and beautiful, but it's that parenthetical right in the middle.
I have made an elegy for myself. It is true.
And now we know, we've read the epigraph, we know that this is for someone who was deported in September of 1942. The poem tells us that they were, you know, then killed in the death camps. And yet, at the middle of the poem, he turns and says, but the elegy is for me. I find that so devastating and honest and curious. He's sensing a deep loss, even though he wasn't there. He begins to mourn himself, his own humanity, in light of this.
Yeah, I was shocked by that, too. That's really the turn in the poem. I have made an elegy for myself, it is true. It seems so bizarre. And it's shocking because it seems at first narcissistic until you think, well, what is he saying there? But what is he saying there by saying it? Is some part of himself has died along with his child?
It's that, and then it's something more. With Hill, it's usually two or three things. And so I think what he's also saying is that how much can he mourn this kid that he didn't know, that lived in a different part of the world when he was, you know, barely old enough to really know much about these things? And so isn't it really only ourselves that we can elegize in that way? And so I think he's admitting that, you know, that his powers are limited to address this sadness on this subject, possibly.
Yeah, he doesn't say who the child is. He just gives the dates of the child's birth.
Born 1906-32.
Just out of curiosity, I'm going to stop and look on Google and see if that date is the exact same date of Hill's birthday. So Geoffrey Hill was born on June 18th, 1932.
Oh,
so it's a day after.
Right.
That's interesting. And then deported, we don't know whether this child was killed on this date, probably not, deported on September 24th, 1942, 10 years later.
Right. So presumably he's looking at documents, right? So it wouldn't have been necessarily recorded when the child died, but there would have been a record of when he was, you know, put on a train or whatever.
Undesirable you may have been, untouchable you were not, not forgotten or passed over at the proper time.
And then after this odd interjection about the elegy being about himself, he brings the poem back into his own present.
September fattens on vines, roses flake from the wall, the smoke of harmless fires drifts to my eyes.
That's a powerful line because the smoke, especially from the crematoria and the camps, which this is harmless smoke compared to that smoke. It just evokes both smokes at the same time. And then he ends really enigmatically to me.
This is plenty. This is more than enough.
Now, that moves me. I have no idea why or what he's intending to get at there.
Well, there is something about the pullback, right, to the present in which the fires are now harmless.
Mm.
Vines are fattening, that there's a kind of regeneration and fecundity. And I find that very upsetting, that kind of things could continue, right? That the world didn't stop, that somehow nature is overgrowing these things and the cycle continues of life. And this is plenty, right? So that, again, is one of Hill's, I think, ambiguities, right? This is plenty. This is bounteous, right? And this is plenty, like in enough as in almost too much, you know. This is, and then he goes on to say this is more than enough.
It's a kind of survivor's guilt.
I guess that's it, yeah.
Even though he didn't personally experience the Holocaust, he took it so personally.
Yeah.
That he feels guilty about it.
I think that's right.
Yeah. Which is not an uncommon feeling to feel.
Yeah.
So, David, we just barely brushed the surface of Jeffrey Hill's poems. He doesn't write only about violence and Holocaust. He writes beautifully about love and even about Princess Diana. He wrote quite a bit about, surprisingly. So for listeners who like what they've heard here and want to get more of Jeffrey Hill, where's a good place to start?
Well, there's a selected poems that came out not too long ago from Yale University Press.
Mm-hmm.
The first real book I got, which I love, it kind of is the first half of his career, is New and Collected Poems, 1952 to 92, from Houghton Mifflin. It's certainly one of the selected poems or that early collected poems has work that really, I feel, will last.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Jeffrey Hill died on June 30th, 2016. David Yezzie's latest book of poems is Birds of the Air. You can also read some of his poems on our website, poetryfoundation.org. As always, let us know what you think of this podcast. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. Also, please let your friends know what you thought of it on social media. You can easily link to it on SoundCloud. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.